And how everybody's doing? Everybody doing good? Had us a good day today. Regardless, we had a good day.
Amen.
Father woke us up this morning. He gave us breath, gave us another shot today to listen and follow the Spirit, do what He says, and continually keep this Torah portion in mind. And do what it says, obey what it says, because that's what the future is going to be. And this is where we're going. And like that python, that snake example, if we're not paying attention and not doing what he says, we may be blinded and held in that snake being slowly squeezed and don't even know it. But going into this Torah portion, understanding Yah's likes and his dislikes, we have Masay, and we'll talk about it a little bit, but well, I got this fresh in my mind. Pastor was talking in the Torah portion, and he went to what Yeshua said in Matthew chapter 10, 38. He who does not take up a stake and follow after me is not worthy of me. And so while we're going through this Torah portion, in the beginning, in Numbers, in their journeys, and you see a tent and it's tent pegs, and when you come with the word stake, it's like we went through the paganism of saying who God and who Jesus, who Yeshua was. It was like, it just opened my eyes. I'm like, oh, a tent peg. Because, you know, the way it was taught before was always pick up your cross. Do this with your cross. Do that with your cross. And the whole time I looked at it because I was so blinded to it because of the way it was taught, I always looked at stake as being cross, which it can reference that. But when I looked at this, it just clicked. I was like, oh, take up your stake. It says you're no longer of the world. You're in the world, but you're not of the world. So we're going to be journeying in this world. We're not going to be pegged down and staying all the way continually in the world's things because it doesn't last. It doesn't work. It breaks his commands in his Torah. But in here, he says, he who does not take up his stake and follow after me is not worthy of me. And all these 42 places that they stopped and went, they learned from it as they went along. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be learning through every stop and every go. Cloud by day, fire by night. We had Moshe, he was the Torah, he was the instructions. And then we had Aharon, he was the high priest that would tell the people, pick up, tell the people, put it down. And if you was complaining, you wasn't paying attention to the Torah instructions. And that's the same thing with us today. If we're complaining, we're not paying attention to what the Spirit's telling us through the Torah portions, telling us through Yeshua what to do. And so that really helped me out on our journeys here. Now, look, you can't stay here. You're going to have to get in this Torah portion. You're going to have to learn his likes and dislikes and put on and perform and do during this Torah portion this week and find out where your mishaps are. And when you fix them, adjust them, you won't stay stuck there. Because if you stay stuck there, just like they did then, the ones who stayed back and paid attention to where they came from. They said, oh, we want to go back. We got to go back. Those that said want to go back, they were still focused on their surroundings. They were focused on the world and the things they wasn't supposed to be doing. If you can come to church service and you can listen to the Torah portion, but if you're not at home practicing, you're looking at the wrong thing. You're paying attention to the wrong thing. You're going to love that more than this because that's where you spend most of your time. You need to spend most of your time in this. And it's not to hurt us Wednesday, Friday, all this knowledge. It's to wean us off of the world and its ways. Because put the python, the snake, back into perspective again. If we keep doing that and doing that and doing that, just like the world is, that rough and tough time is going to come. It's the prices of stuff rising. The believer shouldn't be, oh, here we go again. Oh, you should be focusing on what we're supposed to be focusing on, the Torah. What the Spirit's telling us, because it's going to get worse and worse and worse. That's what he said. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. He said when it happened where they went to the Red Sea and it parted, when they went to the Red Sea, the Egyptians tried to do it, Mishraim, but it swallowed them up because they weren't obeying and doing what the Torah said. Those who are obeying and staying in the Torah, it shields them and protects them. I like what Brother Jared said the other day about the Zetzites. That really stuck too. So I got steak. That stuck to me. This stuck to me. He said, when you look up at the Rekia, and the blue light would come down like the four corners, the four pillars. He says, there's four corners of the earth, four pillars. There's pillars. And the light would shine on you. and Yeshua would be our covering. And Jehovah is his covering. And as long as we're being obedient to the Torah, it shields us and it's our covering. We're walking in the light. But the minute we're disobedient, we break the command. We break the Torah and get out of it. We're underneath the protection, the sea would swallow us up just like it did the Egyptians. And it's the same thing in the end times. When we get into the world and we keep being of the world and trying to mix between the two, we talked about this many times before. You can't mix. There is no such thing as an in-between. It's hot, cold, good, tov, ra, evil. It's one side, it's curses or blessings. It's one side or the other. And the one you give in to the most, that's the one that's going to grab you. Because in the end, it's inevitable. It's inevitable. The one who's staying on that side, when it hits the world's going to be looking for something to take care of them, to feed them, the food, the jobs, the help. Everything's falling apart. I don't have nothing to fall on. So the world's going to offer the poison. It's going to be a poison that the world offers. And when the world offers the poison, they're going to take it. And they're going to die from it. It says, when you drink of the water, you won't die of it. And it talks about that. It reflects all those things and all the stops and goes in there. So in Masay, Hebrew for journeys. And I went and looked up some of these Hebrew letters. Because the language of Yehovah, the Hebrew language, is incredible. And every letter gives you everything tying into the word. Not even to mention the nouns and the pronouns and the verbs. It says... Oh, and I got to hit y'all with a question before we get started. What is the Torah? Instructions for life. What is sin? What is sin? S-I-N. What is sin? That's right. You're breaking the Torah. You're breaking the commands. You're breaking the Torah. So every time we sin, break the Torah. Remember that blue light. Not just the light that come off the menorah. It's the same light. It comes out of heavens. It comes down upon them. The Spirit is on you and it shields and protection. When you get underneath that covering, when you sin, we have an advocate with the Father. Yeshua is up in the heavenlies praying for us to get us right back in the light again. So be shielded and protected. That's why it's so important that when you make a mistake, teshuva, turn back to the source. Masay. Hebrew for journeys and departures. The Hebrew letters tell us the full meaning of this Hebrew word, and the same with the Hebrew names. We know names mean something in Hebrew. We got the first letter is a mem. And the modern Hebrew, when you look up there, that's what the modern looks like. But the early Hebrew, the ancient Hebrew, was waters. The early Semitic pictograph for this letter is a picture of waves of water. This pictograph has the meanings of liquid, water, and sea, mighty and massive from the size of the sea, and chaos from the storms of the sea. The modern Hebrew name for this letter is mem, probably the word mayim, meaning water. The word mayim is the plural form of ma, probably the original name for this letter, meaning what? To the Hebrews, the sea was a feared and unknown place. For this reason, this letter is used as a question word. Who, what, when, where, why, and how, in the sense of searching for an unknown. So that's just the first letter, and we already see that in journeys. You're going to be journeying. You're going to be moving. Then we have the letter Samech. It looks like a circle. That's the modern Hebrew. But the early Hebrew was like a sticker bush. It was a one line with a couple of lines on it. It looked like a sticker bush, a thorn bush. It is used almost exclusively throughout the early and middle history of this letter. This picture has the meanings of pierce and sharp. Just keep that in mind. Yeshua wore a crown of thorns. Just think about that. It's all there. All the pieces of the puzzle are there. That's why it's so incredible going through all these Torah portions each week. You just keep learning and learning. It's ever learning, ever learning. It's incredible. This letter also has the meaning of a shield, as the thorn bushes were used by the shepherd to build a wall or shield to enclose his flock during the night to protect them from the predators. Another meaning of this letter is to grab hold, as a thorn clings to hair and clothing. Of all the letters in the Hebrew alphabet, this is the most difficult to reconstruct due to its limited archaeological and textual support. The modern Hebrew name for this letter is samach, which is a word that means support, grab, hate, shield, and protect. So you see, you're being shielded and protected through the journey. You're not being left out there alone in the chaos by yourself. And then you have the letter ayin. The modern Hebrew looks like two candlesticks with a flame, on each. The early Hebrew was an eye, actual eye, a circle with a dot in the middle. The ancient picture for this letter is an eye and is a picture of an eye. This letter represents the idea of seeing and watching as well as knowledge, as the eye is the window of knowledge. The name of the letter is ayin, a Semitic word meaning eye. This letter is silent in the modern Hebrew. There is no indication that the ancient Semitic had a sound for this letter as well as it appears to have been silent in the past. The Greek language assigned the vowel sound with the O to the letter and may be the origin of the number O. As Hebrew did not have one letter for the O sound, the Greeks took this silent letter and converted it into a vowel, which means watch, know, shade, silent, and yod. And now we're on yod. The modern Hebrew, we talk about that, not one dot, a tittle. But the early Hebrew was an arm and a hand. The early Semitic pictograph of this letter is an arm and hand. The meaning of this letter is work, make, and throw, the functions of the hand. The modern Hebrew name, Yod, is a derivative of the two-letter word. Yod, a Hebrew word meaning hand, the original name for the letter. The ancient and the modern pronunciation of this letter is a Y. In ancient Hebrew, this letter also doubled as a vowel with an I sound. The Greek language adopted this letter as the vowel iota. So not one dot or iota. See where we get iota from? Iota. Not one dot, a tittle, or iota will ever be removed until everything comes to pass, the Torah. So that's what it means. When you look at that in the New Testament of the Brit Hadishah, you can find it in the Hebrew letters. To work, throw, make, and praise. And the root words that tie these together is Jehovah's language that created everything in the journeys and departures. So we have all those letters and all their meanings to Masay, which is journeys, and it all ties together. And that's not to mention all the rest that can tie in. The root words that tie into this. There's many root words. And as we talked about before in Torah, Numbers 33, 1 through 36, 13, and the Half Torah, Jeremiah 2, 4 through 28, and 4, 1 through 2. So 42 times in 40 years, 42 lessons to learn driving down tent pegs, pulling up tent pegs, not complaining but appreciating Him, weaning us off the things we inherited from our forefathers. That's what we're doing. The lifestyle of this world is paganism, is the lust of the flesh, is the pride of life, and the operation of this world is controlled by Hasatan to keep us separated from each other. I really enjoy going to Indiana because I love the way everybody works together as a unit. There's no individualism. We struggle here because we have individualism. Our workplaces and jobs are no doubt in the world. That's what keeps us separated so badly, is individualism. And we're working our way that way. We're going to get there. But that's why we need each other. We need you up there, and I'm talking to Brother AJ, we need them up there to help us. We got a lot of things in common we need help with. And that's why Yehovah is putting everybody together. Puts everybody together. When we come to Shabbat, there's no individualism. It's a gathering. That's the way He made it. When we separate, that breaks the Torah. We shouldn't be breaking the Torah. That's why we have so much hurt and pain and strife towards one another, because it's breaking the Torah. It's individualism. And so it really hurts. It really does. We're not where we're supposed to be yet. We're working our way to get there, and that's why we're learning. And we're going to get there. We're just going to keep praying and asking the Father to help us. Yeshua had a census. Who is with me? That's another thing. That's a great thing that Amish do up there. There's a census that's taken. Who's on each side of the side? You with me or not with me, right? And if you're not there on that day, come look for you. What's going on here? What's happening? Why you didn't show up? That's very important. You got to have instructions. You got structure and rules. Israel had a different set of instructions and lifestyle from the world's lifestyle. It's supposed to be set apart and different. So we're sojourners. So we're set apart sojourners. And tent stakes are pegs. So I'm going to start with slide 8. This week's Torah portion is called Maseh, which means departures, stages, journeys, and comes from the root word Masah. Strong, see, now we got root words we're adding to it. Do you see that? There's some root words. Masah, Strong's H4550, which means a pulling up, breaking camp, setting out, a journey. It's like connecting the dots. Everything connects. We talked about this the last two Torah portions I was here about Tzav. And I just keep going over and over. Maybe you'll get it as I just keep going over it. I was just looking over it one day, and I was just putting the puzzle pieces together, and it just stuck. You know, sometimes things just stick. Tzav is a righteous man connected. Righteous man connected to Yehovah. A righteous man connected. Tzav. The Zadi is a righteous man, and the Vav is a tent peg. It's connected. Tzav. Then we had Tzavah. Tzavah was obeying a command, going to war. The righteous man that's connected, going to war. Then you got Tzavaot. Tzavaot was Yehovah of hosts. He's the commander and the chief. He's the one ahead of the forefront of the battle. So when they listened and said, did what he said, they all followed suit. They all stood up and went, and they all won the battle following Yehovah of hosts. Tzavaot. So you got Tzav, Tzavah, and Tzavaot. Now we got all these to learn. I don't know all these yet. But little bit by little bit, each year, you're going to learn the Hebrew word and its meaning and how it all ties. Pulling up, breaking camp, setting out, a journey, order of march. And this comes from the primitive root verb, nasa. Strong's H5265, meaning to pull out or up, set out on a journey, and depart. I'm not going to go over many of these. It's just keeping us refreshed. What is in essence the meaning behind the term for the departures of the children of Israel can be understood as a pulling up of the stakes in order to journey forward, a pulling up of the tent peg stakes and break camp to move on. So whoever can't pull up your stake and follow me, he's not worthy, he won't. He won't. When we consider this analogy, a picture of pulling up stakes to move on and depart, we are quickly reminded of the words of our Master Yeshua Messiah. And here it is right here, Matthew 10:38. And he who does not take up his stake and follow after me is not worthy of me. And in Matthew 16:24, then Yeshua said to his taught ones, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his stake and follow me. Luke 14:27. And whoever does not bear his stake, now you can put cross there. Whoever does not bear his stake, his cross, and come after me is unable to be my taught one. Mark 10:21. And Yeshua, looking at him, loved him and said to him, one matter you lack. Go sell all you possess and give to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven. Come follow me, taking up the stake. There's got to be a point somewhere that you got to unhitch and unpeg off of the world system and the ways of the world and everything we was raised to know from our forefathers. We inherited lies. We got to recognize those in the Torah, what his likes and dislikes are, and get rid of those things. Because he said, if you leave them with you, and don't leave them behind. If you keep them and don't leave them behind, they'll become thorns to your side and to your eyes. You'll come to a spot where you just panic and you're not going to want to stay and you're going to quit because you're carrying something that's poison. You can't bring it with you. You can't bring the paganism with you. You can't bring the false, twisted lies with you. You can't keep doing the things the system of the world does because it's tainted. It's tainted. It doesn't last. The things of the world won't last. But His Torah lasts forever. And Yeshua proved that. He's the living Torah. And He's seated at the right hand of the Father. Death couldn't hold Him. Why? Because He was obedient to all the Torah. He didn't break it not one time. And so that's why He was able to live. The Torah is pure. And when we live it, we're covered and shielded from the elements that surround us that we're coming out of. What's the point if we stay out there and keep doing those things and we come here to listen to instructions but don't do it? It doesn't make any sense to me. As we begin this portion by looking at a summary of these departures, journeys, and stops of the children of Israel through the wilderness, we'll clearly recognize and see how each stop and departure point teaches us many great lessons in pulling up, taking up their stake, and following Messiah. All 42 of them are incredible. And there are a lot to go through. I went through all of them the other day, and I'm like, and then we got to the end where we just came from, and the last Torah portion, they were right there. And so many fell, 24,000, right there. And because they gave in to the world system, the things the enemy threw at him, because that's what he's going to do. He's not going to stop. He's going to try and take out as many as he can right there at the door. Taking up their stake and following Messiah teaches great lessons in pulling up stake and following Messiah. We must remember that we are sojourners here and are continually reminded to not become settled in the world's ways and the fleshly desires. But rather, we are to live as sojourners who are looking forward to the sure and promised hope of what is to come, and therefore we do not put down deep roots into worldly matters that may cause us to be held back. And it will. Yeshua wasn't joking. He says, you won't be able. I was watching something on Facebook the other day. I come across. There was this girl, she's a weightlifter. I mean, she's built too. And she got up there, and I'm expecting her to grab that thing and just throw it up there. Well, she wasn't able. She grabbed that thing, she threw it up, and she went to stand up, and her body went shaking, and it pulled her head clean down, and her feet went up in the air. Boom! She wasn't able. She didn't work up to that point. In these Torah portions, we need to keep working ourselves up, breaking the things off we shouldn't be doing. No doubt, we should fully have it on Shabbats already. I don't know why we all don't have it fully, but sooner or later, it's going to come to that point. You're going to think you could do it, and you're not going to be able to. You're going to give in. The enemy will pull you away. That's what he does. He waits. He watches. He's a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. And that's what he does. He waits, and he watches for you to go meddling around or slack back, just like it did with the Amalekites, Amalek, just like when COVID came. All those were slacking and fell behind. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 38, I think we went through that already. I'm sorry. And we went through all those already. So, unable and able. I was talking about that girl that couldn't lift up them weights. Unable and able. You know, for years since I've been coming, for the 22 years I've been coming here, in other churches and other places, you always hear people preach and talk about somebody that's an addict, addicted to drugs and alcohol. I was addicted to some drugs and alcohol, and I came out of it. Thank you, Yeshua, for pulling me out of there. He threw the mantle on me one day, and so I decided to follow him. He called me. And so that's why I'm still here today. I've had mistakes along the way. But through these Torah portions, you know what's more addictive than any drug or alcohol? Is our flesh. Our flesh and the things of this world. He said they kept grumbling and complaining because they was addicted to their flesh. They wanted to appease themselves to the flesh. And it tells. Whenever we're not working on the Torah in our lives and doing the things and giving thanks and praise and gathering together and doing what he says, we start still doing what we like to do, and it appeases the flesh. And then we get angry and bitter and blame other people. We appease the flesh. It's an addiction. We're addicted to our flesh. That's why we lag behind, and that's why we don't want to come. And somebody hurt my feelings because we're addicted to the flesh. It's very addictive whenever you stomp on somebody else's toe or they stomp on your toe, it wants to come out. And over time, doing what you're supposed to, it won't come out like that. It won't affect you because we keep practicing on those things, practicing on things we're not supposed to do. We practice things we're supposed to do, and we're not so propelled to do those things. You won't hear the F word ever come out of my mouth. It's not part of my vocabulary. It took me some time. It was a habit. And so there's other things that I've habited that I no longer do. It took me a little while to get to Shabbat. You know, do the seventh day. It was kind of strange. I'm not used to that. I was doing it because I was told. But after I started doing it for a while, I can't wait. Like it used to be for Friday night to go get the alcohol and go to the clubs. I can't wait to get here. I'm coming to meet my Father. I'm getting some more instructions. I'm pulling away from the world. I'm getting more life in me. I'm getting to meet more people. I'm being able to share with them. And I'm not afraid. But it's the opposite. If you don't come and you don't do what he says, you get afraid. You get full of fear because it's the unknown. It's darkness out there. Your eyes get blinded. That's why he says you'll be full of fear like the world does. The flesh and the world is our drug addiction. The Torah study, attendance, yoked up with Messiah, following his instructions, living it like the living Torah will make us able. It will make us able. Because Yeshua said you won't be able. But if you will, you'll be able. You practice these things. Put them to practice. You'll be able. And little by little, you'll learn Hebrew words. You'll learn their meanings. And you won't have somebody throw you something false and pull it over your eyes because you already know it already. Oh, I know where he's going. I know where they're coming from. I've been there. I know that. I read that already. That one little word ain't going to throw me for a loop because I know what it means in the Hebrew. That little English word doesn't mean what it says. And so you won't pull one on me. And that's the whole tactic of the enemy. We sit behind. We don't practice. We don't read. We don't study. We don't know the word, and somebody comes to throw something at us and say, oh, I can't do that no more. I don't want to do that. And you'll leave. You'll go somewhere else. It tells in our responses and our reactions. It tells in our attendance here. When we're told to do something, he wasn't joking. He was serious. It's for our own good. He said, I'm going to give you life. I'm going to give you peace. But if you want to go ahead and do that, you go ahead. Keep listening to your mind. I ask the Father all the time, since we talked about that quite a few Torah portions ago. I say, Father, give me a clear and clean conscience from those old works, the works of the world. I don't want to think like that. Because those things pop up every now and again. It tells our responses and reaction, our attendance here in this tribe. You know, we're a part of a tribe. There's a tribe here. This is a church, part of the body. We're part of the body of Yeshua. This is part of the body of Yeshua. In slide 13, we must remember that we are sojourners here and are continually reminded to not become settled in the world's ways and fleshly desires, but rather we're to live sojourners who are looking forward to the sure and promised hope of what is to come, and therefore we do not put down deep roots into worldly matters that may cause us to be held back. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, 1 through 23. You know, we might have went through these during the week last week, but you got to keep going over them and keep going over them. Remind yourself. 1 Corinthians 3, 1 through 23. And I, brothers, was not able to speak to you as to spiritual ones, but as to fleshly. Why? Why? Because they wasn't doing what they're supposed to be doing. When you're lagging behind and not spending enough time, you lag behind, was not able to speak to you as spiritual ones, but as to fleshly. as to babes and Messiah. I fed you with milk and not with solid food, for until now you were not able to receive it. And even now you're still not able, for you're still fleshly. For since there is envy and strife and divisions among you, are you not fleshly and walking according to man? Mm-hmm. You'll see in this Torah portion, it talks about, he uses the beast, the man. Hasatan uses man in this world. He's the god of this world, and he uses men to do what they do today. He uses us whenever we disobey and break the Torah. We become his pawn. It says, are you not fleshly and walking according to man? For when one says, I am of Shaul, and another, I am of Apollos, are you not fleshly? What then is Apollos and what is Shaul but servants through whom you believe as the master assigned to each? I planted, Apollos watered, but Elohim was giving growth. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is any at all, but Elohim who gives the increase. And he who plants and he who waters are one. And each one shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are fellow workers of Elohim. You are the field of Elohim, the building of Elohim, according to the favor of Elohim, which was given to me. As a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation and another builds on it. But each one should look how he built on it. For no one is able to lay any other foundation except that which is laid, which is Yeshua Messiah, the living Torah. What do we lay upon? Whatever the Torah says. Where does it come from? The Torah and the prophets. And they're speaking the same thing. Where does it come from? It's right there in our very eyes. For no one is able to lay another foundation except which was laid, which is Yeshua Messiah. And if anyone builds on this foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each one's work shall be revealed, for the day shall show it up, because it is revealed by fire. And the fire shall prove the work of each one, what sort it is. If anyone's work remains, which he has built on, he shall receive a reward. If anyone's work is burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, but so as through fire. Do you not know that you are a dwelling place of Elohim, and that the spirit of Elohim dwells in you? If anyone destroys the dwelling place of Elohim, Elohim shall destroy him. And remember, it's not a purposely thing that Jehovah does. It was just like the sons of Aharon. When they were told not to do something, they went and did it anyway. It wasn't Jehovah's fault. They just stood out in the presence of the Torah and it just got burned up. And it's the same thing that happened. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was under the Torah. They was in obedience to it, so they went through the fire and they didn't get burned. So it's the same thing in the world today. If you're in obedience and you have the light over you and it's all the way to you because you're being obedient to the Torah, it won't hurt you. Only with your eyes. Why does it say that in there? Only with your eyes shall you behold and see the reward of the wicked. Only with your eyes. 1,000 shall follow your side, 10,000 at your right. But only with your eyes shall you behold and see the reward of the wicked. It says, for the dwelling place of Elohim is set apart, which you are. Let no one deceive himself. If anyone among you seems to be wise in this age, let him become foolish, so that he might become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with Elohim. For it has been written, he catches the wise in their craftiness. And again, Yehovah knows the thoughts of the wise and that they are worthless. So then let no one boast in men, for all belongs to you, whether Shaul or Apollos or Kepha or the world, Kepha or the world or life or death or the present or the future. All belongs to you. And you belong to Messiah, and Messiah belongs to Elohim. So that's the safe place to be. That's where you want to be. So living Torah, living out of instructions of Jehovah, leaving Mishrim, Egypt behind, never to go back, never to turn back. How many he told not to look back? Don't turn back. He who turns his head from hand to the plow, he's not worthy of me. Because you're in love with the world still. You're going to love that more than him. And when it all gets down and dirty and it gets really rough and tough, whatever you're loving the most, that's what you're going to take. Remember when Yeshua said, Will you leave too? They all left him by himself. He said, you're going to leave him too? Go ahead. I always come. You going to leave him too? And later on, Kepha, he come to his senses. He got it. He really got it. What causes us to turn back, look back? Desire's not going to, is not doing what Yeshua said. And that was going back to Luke 14, 27. And whoever does not bear his stake and come after me is unable to be my taught one. Luke 13, 23 through 24. And someone said to him, Master, are there few who are being saved? And he said to them, strive to enter through the narrow gate, because many, I say to you, shall seek to enter in and shall not be able. They won't be able. There's many, many Christians today that really think for sure they're going to enter in and be able, and they won't be able. We know by the fruits that each other bears. So not enough training and strength, not able to bear the load. As sojourners being weaned off this world, whatever our time is spent with the most, and we talked about that. In Matthew chapter 8, 19 through 22. And a certain scribe, having come near, said to him, Teacher, I shall follow you wherever you go. And Yeshua said to him, The foxes have holes and the birds of the heavens nest. Do you see the picture here? Pick up, sit down. Pick up, sit down. Don't stay anchored here. You're not of this world. You are the millennial to come. You are the kingdom that's coming. We're getting ready for a kingdom that's coming. And if we're here today, and it happens to us in this time that we live, in the twinkling of an eye. But those who have been dead for thousands of years are still on the ground right now in a twinkling of an eye. It's all the same time. It's not one's there and one's here and it's unfair and one's looking on me and looking at that. Jehovah is fair with everybody. It's all going to happen at the same time. The trumpet is going to sound. The dead in Christ are going to raise. The twinkling of an eye. It's all going to happen at the same time. All at the same time. But the Son of Adam has nowhere to lay his head. He wasn't getting stuck in the facets of this world. He wasn't getting stuck in all this stuff and all the things to say and all the things that had to go on in this world. He was doing what his father told him to do, and that's what he stayed with. And another of his taught ones said to him, Master, first let me go and bury my father. Here we go. Let me first go bury my father. But Yeshua said to him, Follow me and leave the dead to bury their own dead. You got to... What's that song? Leave it all behind. Leave it all behind. Remember that song? I don't listen to it anymore. I got a lot of other things I listen to. It's a whole lot better. But I just remember that song. It pops in my mind because that's what I used to listen to on the radio all the time. But it does click when it comes to that part. Leave it all behind. Don't leave something as a thorn in your side or pricks in your eyes. Because it will bring you down and the enemy's going to use it against you. He will use it against you. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, 7 through 13. And do not become idlers as some of them, as it has been written. Remember, the people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. Neither should we commit whoring as some of them did. And one day 23,000 fell. Neither let us try Messiah as some of them also tried and were destroyed by serpents. Neither grumble as some of them also grumbled and were destroyed by the destroyer. Is this sinking in? And all these came upon them as examples. And they were written as a warning to us on whom the ends of the ages have come, so that he who thinks he stands, let him take heed lest he fall. No trial has overtaken you except such is common to man. Think about that. No trial has overtaken you except such as is common to man. It's the flesh. It's the things that we're addicted to. It's common things that we need to work on and get rid of, because it will be a thorn in our side if we don't get rid of it. It says, "And Elohim is trustworthy, who shall not allow you to be tried beyond what you are able." See the word able again? "But with the trial shall also make the way of escape, enabling you to bear it." And he gives us time. He gives us mercy. He gives us time to work on it. Luke chapter 13, 22. I just threw this in as a little. "And he was going through the cities and the villages teaching, and he was journeying towards Jerusalem." Nothing significant in there about our Torah portion with, but I come across journeying. Yeshua was journeying. Maybe there is. You never know. They got a lot of stuff that's significant that we'll come across as we're learning. Now we're going to go to slide 49. Now we're going from the place of Ramses. And before starting with each stop individually, it is very important for us to realize that our walk will be, before we go there, let me go here. Yeah, before starting with each stop individually, it is very important for us to realize that our walk will be fruitless without the Torah and the leading of the Ruach HaKodesh, the set apart spirit. And as we walk fully in and stay in Messiah, our high priest, and the living Torah, may we bear much fruit, fruit that lasts, realizing that every action, thought, and deed can and must be done in and through him who has called us out of darkness, ignorance, into his marvelous light and knowledge. Now, keeping that in mind, I was reminded of one slide that Pastor emphasized, this one right here. Every choice affects a future. Keep that in mind. Every choice affects. I went and looked up that word affects, and it's spelled correctly. There's an A-F-F-E-C-T, and there's an E-F-F-E-C-T, and the A-F-E-C-T is an action. An action word, affects. Every choice affects a future for blessing or curse or life or death. So now we all know, and we're accountable for what we do, for our children, and for those who are responsible for that Yehovah puts in front of our path. Everywhere we go, everything we do, every choice affects a future. We don't feel like reading. I want to go do something else for a little while that day. And I told Brother Scott the other day, I said, I'm guilty. Some afternoons, I'm tired. I come in from fishing. I'm like, man, you know what? I'm just going to sit down on the couch, get me something to eat. You know, I'm just going to look on Facebook a minute. You know, just see what's going on with the fishing trips for the day. And I realized sometimes doing that, an hour goes by quick. I was like, man. And it didn't do me anything. It didn't give me anything. It gave me some thoughts for what happened during the day, but it didn't give me anything I needed. And I didn't find like it is in the mornings or on Shabbat, where it gave me a power source of energy like it did in the evening. I was like, man, that was a waste of time. And so in the evening, I tried where I started reading and doing the Torah portion, and I wasn't so tired as I thought. You know, the flesh will fool you sometimes. It'll make you feel like, you know, I'm tired, you know, I really don't. But it's the addiction of the flesh. We got to make ourselves sometimes. And you'd be surprised what you can do with a little push. I told my wife, I was so thankful for her. She helped me in a lot of things this week. And she said, do you want me to go with you? I'm like, yeah. You want me to come help you with that? Yeah. And because she was there, she was that, you know, was looking up a word that we talked about on Shabbat. You know how important it is to come here Midrash? Midrash is just as important as Shabbat. We come here Midrash and we talk about things, and Brother Jared was here with the word of Yehovah. So whoever wasn't here that could have been here and pushed it in their schedule a little bit, Yehovah had some words to speak to the husbands and the wives. And so he was talking about the husbands and talking about the wives. And he come across that scripture, he didn't talk about it, but I remembered it. Because we talked about that. It says, and she is the weaker vessel. And for many, many years, I was always taught wrong, that she was like weak and frail and powerless and needed me. or the guy or the man. But those words there in the Greek, when you look at it in Aramaic, they go together. Weak is not separated from vessel. Weak vessel goes together in Aramaic. And there's an Aramaic word there. And Brother Jared talked a lot about the word mem and giving life and water. And there's a lot of mems in those two words. You ought to go look it up. I don't have time to go through it. But it came to the end of the story that I was reading, and it was reminding me that we're one vessel. And she's that sail, that mast, that vessel. And if that sail is torn and not there, I can't sail on. So we meet together. We're together. And I was reminded of that song, Pastor Charlton, "Sail on, ship of Zion." Remember y'all used to sing that? I mean, there's probably some words I don't want to maybe go back to. I don't know. I didn't go dig it up. But I was reminded of that. And so the last couple of days are helping me. I said, come on, my sail. This ship's going to sail today. And we're getting it done. We got it done together. I need her and she needs me. She's not weak and frail. She's the strong sail on my ship, on my vessel. And we work together. She's frail as far as you can easily tear that thing if you don't take care of that sail. And that word means something in Aramaic. And that's what they related to back then. The ship, a vessel, that's what they used back then. There was no motorboats with gas engines back then. It was a sailing ship. So you got to go look up those words. If you just stay in the English and rest there and just listen to any preacher telling you, oh, she's the weaker vessel, you're going to treat her wrong. You don't treat her. She's a woman. They're both men. One man. Man and woman. They're one unit. She came from my rib. And so we're one unit. She's never to be looked down upon as something. It's terrible. The way the world teaches things. Every choice affects a future for blessing or curse. So let us now look at the journey in Ramses. I'm not going to go over them all because Pastor and been through all these. I'm just going to brief on them a little bit to get us back to par. And then I'm going to go on down the line and start on something if we got time. Let's see what time it is. Okay, let us now look at the journey. Ramses. The first starting point, zero, is Ramses. Strong's 87486, which means child of the sun. And this was a city in Lower Mishreem, built by Hebrew slaves, probably in the region of Goshen. So remember, we're going through just little bitty pieces of what we've been through already in the scriptures, of them coming out of Egypt, crossing the Red Sea and all these places they had to stop before they got there. This is the detail. I remember when we talked about Revelations years ago, it wasn't supposed to be done in order. But there was like looking at them off of a mountain. You see things near and you see things far. And so he brings things up close and he sees things from afar. And so that's how it's going through this pattern here of each little individual stop in detail. And that means child of the sun. Think about that. Child of the sun. And this was a city in Lower Mishreem built by the... They built this. We talked about that. They built this. And so he's talking about this on Shabbat, and I'm like, I'm putting it in my mind, I'm like, they built that. They really did. They were enslaved to build those things. And the people, we are in the world, and we're building those things in the world, and then we come out of it. And we have those things still in our memory and our thoughts, and we've got to work that out of ourselves. Remember that Goshen? I know a lot of people in here, or some people in here love that word, Goshen. Remember that Goshen was the best part of the land that was given to the Israelites, where they could tend their sheep and were protected from the plagues sent upon Mishreem, Egypt. Israel had invested much time and effort into building the city where they dwelt and had to leave. Can you imagine putting a lot of hard time? Now look, I remember for Katrina, all my childhood growing up with my grandma and my grandpa, all the things that we had there, memories. And I'm all in a little short time, it's all gone. And I go there and I cried over, we won't have the Thanksgiving here together as family anymore. We won't have this or that there anymore. That's what I was raised in. It's with me. It's in me. And I still don't forget. It's still with me. And they built these things and it's in them. But Jehovah's got to get it out of them because it's bad for them. They're going to die in it. I got to get you out of it. And a lot of people even here in this congregation is having a tough time with some things. It's in you, but it's got to come out of you. If it don't come out of you when it happens, it's a thorn in your side, pricks to your eyes. You got to get it out. You got to let it go. You got to leave it behind. And they invested much time and effort into building the city where they dwelt and had to leave. They had to leave behind that which they built. And this is an important lesson for us, as we too have to leave behind the places of pagan worship that we perhaps had invested much in, or even given all our time, energy, and resources to, as we realize how we were in fact in bondage and enslaved to the lies of man-made traditions and worship practices that are twisted forms of sun worship. And it is. And when you see it and you realize it, it turns your stomach to ever participate ever again, because he shows you what it really is and where you came from and what you were taught. It's not like we woke up one day and said, hey, I want to figure something out. I'm going to look at this. And we was taught it. We was raised in it. And it was put in us, just like all my stuff with my grandparents. They raised me in that. They put me in all that. And it's there in my memory bank. And so when I came out of the world, when Yeshua threw me the tunic, I had to leave things behind. And so he's the living Torah. And I need the Torah. And I need to be as he is to make it. The first starting point of these departures teaches us how we too have to leave the child of the sun. That is, we have to leave all forms of Tammuz worship and all that is related to pagan sun worship. Mishrim, Egypt. So we've learned the word in English, Egypt, all our lives. Then we learn the word Mishrim, which is the Hebrew word. Literally means worshippers of Ra, or sun god. Gives you a little bit more detail as we go along. Now you know what you're dealing with when you say that word and where it came from. And how they was raised up in Egypt and how they learned all those practices. Now they got to get rid of it. Then you see why they built the calf. For what reason? It was in them. They still had it in them. He's trying to get it out of them. That's what the wilderness journey is, to get it out of you. And how many died? And only two made it? Only two made it? Hello? That was a lot of people. Generations, I mean, lots and lots of people died. In the Hebrew, the word used for Egypt is Mishrim, Strong's H4714, which is a dual of Matsur, Strong's H4692, which means siege enclosure, siege and entrenchment. You getting the picture? A little bit by little bit, you get this. What happened to them when they was in Egypt? They was trying to be seized, held, tortured. What you think the world's doing? You get out there and you talk to people. Yeah, inflation. Yeah, the gas. Now the light bills. And it's squeezing, and it's squeezing, right? And it's going to keep squeezing and squeezing. What are we supposed to be doing? Are we supposed to be acting and sounding just like the world? No. As we're coming out, he's going to show us how to stand. And you're going to see it's going to get really tough, because it's going to keep squeezing and squeezing. And oh, this is the beautiful word that everybody says. Oh, it'll pass. It's going to get better. Things are going to get better. Oh, it's going to get better. You can walk in New Orleans and see people still walking around like this with masks. Everywhere they go, a mask. Everywhere I got a mask. Everywhere. I'm like, it's crazy. It really is. It's really crazy. And people might get offended me saying that, but it is crazy. It is really crazy. The world is crazy, people. We got to come out of there. It says, many take the road of the wide. Very few find the narrow. We got to keep our eyes locked on Yeshua. We got to stay yoked up to Yeshua. which comes from the primitive root word tsor. Tsor, Strong's H6696, meaning to confine, bind, and besiege. These words all mean one form or another, being constricted or shut in and enclosed. Just as Jehovah delivered our fathers back then from bondage to a system of enslavement, so too does our mighty Maker release us from bondage to enslavement of man's twisted traditions, worship practices by his blood. The blood of Yeshua Messiah, he has come to set the captives free and release from darkness the prisoners. The children of Israel left on the 15th day of the first month of Yehovah's calendar. I didn't say the Gregorian calendar. I didn't say man-made calendar that you see today. You got to go back and study the Hebrew calendar. The first month of Yehovah's calendar, on the day after the Pesach, and went out with boldness. And we talked about that. After they would win something, after something would, a miracle would happen for them, after all the firstborn of Egypt all died and they obeyed and all theirs lived, that pumps you up. Woo! I picked that one up that time. I got me some power here. They had us enslaved. Now they're on the other end of the stick. I was being squeezed. Now they're being squeezed. So then they can move further with strength. And then something else would happen again. They would win. And that would give them more boldness. So every time we have a miracle that we've been praying for, and we see people like my brother Shane that I took fishing, and he was supposed to die, and he's alive today to tell the story, it's a miracle. It makes me have boldness. I'm like, yeah, it works. I want to continue doing this, praying for people and loving people and obeying his commands. It's working. Yehovah defies the whole idea of sun worship and around equinox and solstice worship as done by pagan worship and calendar setting by bringing his people out of the full moon, bringing his people out at the full moon. This was not an undercover mission. They went out boldly, and so we must not be sorry to leave behind the lies. Leaving Ramses is vital to us if we are to become a prepared bride. So if you're not obeying and doing what he says, you're more than likely going to want to go back because you love that. You love that. You want that. You're addicted to that. You can't seem to get away from that. So you can come here and we can put on a show, but you go back out there and you're only fooling yourself. This was not an undercover mission, yet they went out boldly. And so we must not be sorry to leave behind the lies. Leaving Ramses is vital to us. There's a lot of pagan traditions that I'm not sorry. I don't miss certain things anymore. There's certain things that I don't miss anymore that I used to love to do. I don't do that anymore because I know what it represents now. I didn't know at the time. It says, this was not an undercover. They went out boldly and must not be sorry to leave behind the lies. Leaving Ramses is vital to us if we're to become a prepared bride. A move that sadly too many are not willing to make as they're unable to let go of what they have invested so much into, and so their journey of walking into righteousness never gets off the ground. As they continue to try to justify their way of life as acceptable worship, yet staying in Ramses is not an acceptable option for a true believer. We must also begin to recognize and understand Yehovah's reckoning of time as we have been enslaved by man's pagan adapted calendars, which center on the worship of the sun and all forms of pagan deities. And so as we went through those times of weaning us off of there, weaning us out of it, then there came a time, okay, you ready now? You got it? All right, let's pick up your stake and let's move to the next one. But if you're over here, well, I really love this, you're going to get left behind. You're going to fall behind. You got to pick up the pace. He's not going to give us too much that we can't bear. We can. We got to pick it up. We got to try. Pick it up. We got to try. Got to pick it up. We got to try. And if you can't read, there's many resources that you can go to. I don't have to read a lot of this. I go on my phone right here. Watch. I'm just going to give you a little example how I do this. This is easy.
Torah, instructions for life. What is sin? Breaking command instructions of Yehovah.
All you got to do is press play. Siri talks to you. It's not hard. We don't have no excuse to say, well, I can't read. Go listen to it. Have somebody get it set up for you. Press the button and listen. It's easy. It's not hard. We can do this. This is not hard. I watched people that don't have no arms and no legs and do stuff in Olympics. We just got to pick up the pace and quit being lazy. We're just too lazy. We're too addicted to our flesh. We got to get out of our flesh and get to moving, or we're going to get left behind. Come on, that's enough. You can't be in love with that no more. That's going to kill you. It's going to destroy you. Pick up the stakes, and let's move to the next one. When I'm traveling on the road, there's these slides, and I can go to my Bible and listen to it, but I couldn't listen to it on here, and I'm like, man, I got to figure a way. And then somebody showed me. I don't remember who it was. My Aunt Mary. She said, oh, Chad, I got something to show you. You can get Siri to talk to you. Siri can talk to you on there on those slides. So I figured out how to put it in there, so when I'm driving, I can listen to Siri tell me all the stuff on the slides when I'm driving, rather than having to wait for a spot and waste 2 hours to read or wait or have somebody else drive for me. So if I'm driving, I can just press play, and I'm getting it, and I'm getting it. You want to know how you pick up the pace and get it? You're listening to it? That's how I'm doing it. You learn. You want something bad enough, you try and get it. You want to go catch them fish, you're going to scratch and scrounge. You're going to find them fish if you want them fish for your customers. If them ladies want to go find that garment, they're going to go looking around in the red, white, and blue, and they're going to find that garment. They're going to find that garment. We're going digging.
Amen. Bye, Felicia.
Yeah. I love y'all. So in leaving Ramses, letting go of paganism, there's also, and I'm not going to have time to go through it, Pastor went through it already, but the name of Jehovah is in there, his son's name. We got the name of Jehovah. Through those times, we picked up our stakes there. We learned that Jehovah has a name. He's not his son's name. He is his name. And his name is in there. And we learned all the great detail. We did our studies and found out his name. Jehovah. Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is the letters in the Hebrew. And then when you add the vowels, that we did some studies of finding the vowels as Jehovah. We found out his son's name. You say Jesus all the time. We found out that his name is Yeshua. Yeshua has a name in there that it means salvation. All the Hebrew names have a meaning to it. English names don't have a meaning to it. But this does. There's a lot of stuff that we learn in names and detail in these Torah portions that tells you that's affiliated because it was through paganism. Learning in paganism, that's where a lot of those names and things came from. It's pretty interesting. And then we move forward with the stakes and come to Sukkot. Slide 82. Leaving Ramses for Sukkot. But don't get me wrong, we still got to use Jesus because there's people in this world that don't know what you're talking about when you say Yeshua sometimes. So you got to tell them, hey, Jesus, you use the word Jesus, name Jesus. You have to use it. It'd be like going to another country. I'm not going to get into all that, but you know what? You get my point. Leaving Ramses for Sukkot. In Hazan, Revelations 12, we see a 42-month period beginning as the woman leaves Jerusalem to go into the wilderness. After giving birth. So I'm reading this. You keep in your mind where they were and where they were going in the Torah. Going in the wilderness after giving birth. Satan was cast out of heaven. The child was caught up to Elohim and to his throne while the woman went into the wilderness to a place prepared and was nourished. So in Revelations 12, 1 through 6, it says, and a great sign was seen in the heaven, a woman clad with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And being pregnant, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth. And another sign was seen in the heaven, and see a great fiery red dragon having seven heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on his head. And his tail draws a third of the stars of heaven and throws them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she bore a male child who was to shepherd all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was called away to Elohim, to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by Elohim to be nourished there 1,260 days. Our wilderness journey is a time of nourishment and preparation. So if we're not taking our time to eat on this and do this, we're wasting a lot of time that you can't get back. You can't get it back. And so many times we look at this where we are today and we're like, me and Scott was like, man, I wish I would have learned this 20 years ago. I wish I would have known this 20 years ago. So our wilderness journey is a time of nourishment and preparation as we learn to hear the voice of the Almighty. As we see in our forefathers' journey through the wilderness, Yehovah did in fact nourish them and prepare them to enter into the promised land. Yet it took longer than one would expect, so we can also learn through these stops that the longer we rebel and grumble, the longer it will take for us to enter into his rest. And quite frankly, we do not have 40 years to get our act together. We don't. We've been looking at the Shemitah thing, and I'm like, could this really be in our time? Should I pick up the pace or should I not? Those things run through your mind, and you look at these things. But if I don't, it would have been better that I prepared if it didn't than if I didn't, and I get out there way in the middle of the ocean, and I don't have that extra oil filter, and I spring a leak in my oil. Then what? It would have been better that I had an extra oil filter to make it back home, and I'm lost out at sea, and maybe nobody might ever find me. You see why it's important? It'd be better to have it than not have it. And we have a bad habit in our flesh of saying, you know, I'll just wait. The flesh has got us on a bad habit. I'll just wait. Or maybe next time. Oh, it's going to be okay. Will it? That's not what the Father says. That's not what Yeshua says. If it's that tight and he's serious, I take his word for it. It says, as we see in our forefathers' journey through the wilderness, Yehovah did in fact nourish them and prepared them to enter into the promised land, yet it took longer than expected. So we can also learn, okay, yeah, and we don't have 40 years, right? So leaving Ramses is the start. We have not yet arrived. It is only the beginning. Then the stripping away truly begins. What starts our journey is the realization of his true name. It was a beginning for us. I was blown away, you know, because all my life, I believed there was three, there was one, there was this, there was that, but I just believed it because that's what I was taught, and I wanted to make it. But then when it was presented to me, I'd never seen that card played before, that he's the Father, and that's the Son, and they each have a name. I was like, a kid can understand this. This isn't hard at all. A Father and a Son. And the Son talks to his Father. I had to unravel all this stuff that was all twisted in my head and throw it in the garbage. I said, this is crazy the way I've been thinking. Now that makes sense to me. That's perfect. A Son talks to his Father. He doesn't talk to himself. That doesn't make any sense. So when I go back to the beginning and I start reading through there and get all the way to there, I'm like, this all makes sense. This is easy. This isn't hard. His yoke is easy, his burden is light, but the world makes it really difficult and hard. Twisted and mixed up traditions and religions of men make it really hard and binding. Realization of his true name. Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, see that right there without the vowels? Yehovah made himself known through Moses, by declaring his name. And that's way back in the beginning. This isn't nothing new. We just was taught wrong and didn't know. Our journey begins with the acknowledgement and acceptance of the true name of Yehovah, as opposed to hybrid pagan titles that many have falsely attributed to the Creator for far too long in vain. An acknowledgement of his name will help bring the full understanding of who it is who is calling you out. For his name and his name alone declares who it is who made you and causes you to be. And so Israel could boldly leave because they knew the one who was saving them. So many today are still stuck in Ramses. How would you like to be Moshe? How would you like to be him that's got to bring it and present it to them? And they don't know. They don't know. And then they got to learn. And it's the same thing today. It's a foreshadow of what's happening today. His name declares who it is who made you and causes you to be. And so Israel could boldly leave because they knew the one who was saving them. So many today still stuck in Ramses because they refuse to accept the true name under the veil of lies that have brought his name to naught. And that's the first thing he says in his commands. It wasn't, thou shalt have no other gods before me. He says, this is my name, and you shall not bring it to naught. This is my name. Nobody teaches that hardly. This is my name, and you shall not bring it to naught. And we disobey his instructions and his commandments, we bring his name to naught. So that's why it's important to obey his commands. In fact, I've broken the third commandment through replacing his name with all kinds of titles and falsified, twisted pagan names under a falsehood that is attributed to sun worship and their false deities. That is why when most are asked what the Ten Commandments are, they often start with Exodus 23, "You shall have no other mighty ones before my face." In which they are half right, as we should have no other mighty ones before him. But the first commandment clearly starts in verse 2 with who he is. I am Yehovah, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, your Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Mishraim, out of the house of slavery. Who did? Yehovah did. To begin our exile out of slavery to the world's man-made systems of profane worship, we need to acknowledge and accept the name that saves and call upon the name. For all who call upon the name of Yehovah shall be delivered. Most will remain in their Ramses simply because they do not know his name. And this is an incredible one to go to, and I read it for years and had no idea what I was reading. It says in Proverbs 30, who has gone up to the heavens and to come down? Who has gathered the wind in his fist? Who has bound the waters in a garment? Who established all the ends of the earth? What is his name, and what is his son's name if you know it? You see that? It's plain as day. Ask the majority of Christians today what the name of their God is, and they will simply not be able to tell you, as they will waver between various titles that associate with pagan deities. And the very number one top name they always say, his name is Jesus. They always call him Jesus. And that's not his name. It's his son's name. And we go look up the Hebrew name as Yeshua. So there's a lot of things to go discover now when you go back and look at it and unravel all the twisted lies and things that we've been taught through the way. Ask the majority of Christians today what the name of their God is, and they will simply not be able to tell you, as they will waver between various titles that are associated with pagan deities or even use the pagan twisted name of Zeus through a worship that was conveniently translated by pagan influence scribes or translators. I'm going to say it again, translated by pagan influenced scribes or translators. So as time went on, paganism all got mixed up into Christianity, and then they started placing the names and all those titles and all those things, and here we are today. And Yehovah's mercy and loving kindness gives us eyes to see, gives us ears to hear, and levav, hearts and minds to know the truth and see and hear his true name. And I'm so thankful and honored to be able to hear that. It is time to respond to the call to come out of her, my people, as Yehovah of hosts declares. And the first step to coming out is knowing his name. In Jeremiah 8:8, it says, how do you say we are wise and the Torah of Yehovah is with us? But look, the false pen of the scribe has worked falsehood. The sad reality of today is that the majority has believed the deception and is, in essence, stuck in their Ramses. It begins with his name, and those who by faith call upon his name receive the free gift of deliverance by the blood of Messiah. Yeshua had been delivered from bondage by the blood of the Lamb over the doorposts of their homes, and now it was time to leave behind all they had known and step out in faith and follow the one who had delivered them from the hand of Pharaoh. So in those slides, they were talked about the feast days, talked about Shabbat. Pick up the stakes from Ramses, a sun god of worship, and move forward from stakes and down at Sukkot. And so now move on to slide. And went to from leaving Ramses to Sukkot. And slide 106. I might have a little time to kind of brief over these a little bit. But man, there's so much importance in here to talk about, and there's no way to talk about them all. I just got the 5-minute slide. Look at that. Slide 106. Sukkot. The first stop in the wilderness journey is called Sukkot, Strong's H5523, which means booths. And this simply means temporary dwelling. And so now we know what Sukkot is. It has a lot to do with tents and tent pegs. And so now we know we are on journeys throughout this world. We're not to stay here. This is not our place. The kingdom of Jehovah that's coming is our place. In the millennial when it comes. And the Torah teacher is going to teach us for 1,000 years. Leading up to the 8th day. Then Yehovah himself. You see how we got to get the names right? You won't know what's coming if you don't know the names right. We don't know who God is. We won't know what's coming in the millennial. So we got to get those right before we can move to the next step. Which means booths. And this simply means temporary dwelling. We must recognize that we are sojourners here, and the first stop of coming out of sun worship is to enter the dwelling of the Most High, Elohim. Sukkot, as we know, is the festival of booths, tabernacles that we keep each year as we remember these wilderness journeys, and that we too are sojourners here. As we await the return of Messiah, he will come and make his booth here among us, and we shall dwell with him forever. This city stop was still in the land of Mishraim, and therefore reminds us very clearly that although we are still in the world, we're not of the world. It was at Sukkot that Yisrael learned to camp out, so to speak, and no longer be accustomed to the false securities of the world, and being rooted in one place of permanence. And as we may also note, this too was a territory that was pretty much occupied by Bedouins, or tent dwellers, who in fact still occupy this area today. It was here at Sukkot that we see from Shemot, Exodus 13, 1-16, that the regulations for the firstborn males are given, and as I said in Revelation 12, the woman bore a male child who would shepherd all the nations with a rod of iron, and that would be Yeshua Messiah. And he is our shepherd. Our first stop at coming out of Egypt, Mishraim, Babylon, Christianity is in fact beginning to keep the Sabbath, and so to enter his rest each week and learn his Torah as a community that is sojourning together. So Shabbat is not for just a couple of individuals to come in or not. Everybody's supposed to gather. It helps each other to gather. We gather on Shabbat. It's a gathering when we come here. And that's how Midrash should be. We all should be here to gather. Because there's going to be a point where everybody's making a move and doing things, and those who are not coming are going to be kind of confused. So what's going on? What's happening? Well, you ought to come Midrash. You ought to come get up to date. What's going on? What's going to be happening? We're moving on. We're pumping the weights. We're learning the instructions. We're gathering instructions. We're going that away. We're coming out of there, and we're going to the next spot. You don't want to fall behind. There's many that go to college that play around and party. They don't do their instructions. They fall behind and ends up getting overwhelmed with it, and they don't finish. They quit. They go do something else. But those who have a sincere heart and want to, you got to pray and ask the Father for the want to spirit. You're going to want to be here. You're going to want to get the instructions, and you want to apply them to your life at home so you can stay up to par with the gather. It's incredible to know whenever somebody's house burns down over there in the Amish, they all get together and it's quick to put it back up. They're all one unit. They're all gathered in unity. They're all doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's incredible. I love it. Some great lessons for us to learn. keep the Sabbath and so enter his rest each week and learn his Torah as a community that is sojourning together. And so in Hebrews 4:9, so there remains a Sabbath keeping for the people of Elohim. The Greek word that is translated here as Sabbath keeping is sabbatimos. Sabbatimos. Strong G4520, which literally means a Sabbath keeping and not just a rest, as some translations have chosen to write in order to justify their agenda in disregarding the need to guard and keep the Sabbath as it should be. I know you gave me the new CD thing, but I'm gonna I got three more slides, and I'm gonna stop there. Sadly, there are too many who claim that they want to leave Ramses, so to speak, yet the comfort of inherited lives is actually too hard for them to let go of the first sign of this. The first sign of this is seen in how they simply refuse to acknowledge the true Sabbath of Yehovah. Having been so indoctrinated for centuries, and that's the problem, so indoctrinated for centuries, most will plainly refuse the truth and accept a twisted lie that claims the Sabbath changed to a Sunday. And you won't find it in Scripture nowhere. You could look till you're blue in the face, you won't find it, but still, for some reason, it's still so indoctrinated so heavily. What most do not realize is that the fact that it all comes down to worship, and we are marked by whom we worship, and the correct or incorrect observance of the Sabbath of Yehovah. Sukkot is the seventh feast of Yehovah. And you know, me and my wife was talking about this when we talked about the 42 stops over 40 years. And we started talking about seven. I said, what's seven and six? It's 42. So we started tying all those things tie together. 6 days you shall work, the seventh day. And remember, Yeshua said, how many times should I forgive somebody? 70 times seven. What's 70 times seven? It's 49. And then you get into, what's the word for it? One in the mountain. Shavuot. The day of Pentecost, when Shavuot, 50 days. On the 50th day, Shavuot. So you got 49 leading to 50. So when you put all those together, they all mean something. It all came from the Torah. That's where it came from. Sukkot is the seventh feast of Yehovah and clearly pictures for us the time when he comes to dwell with us, and is a shadow picture of the millennial reign when the child who was born will shepherd the nations with a rod of iron. See that? Our mark or sign of worship is our Shabbat keeping, for he has given us his Sabbath as a sign between us and him forever. Ezekiel 20:12 says, and I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, to know that I am Yehovah who sets them apart. Ezekiel 20:12, and it says, and set apart my Sabbaths, and they shall be a sign between me and you to know that I am Yehovah, your Elohim. Exodus 31:13-14. I got two more slides. And you shall speak to the children of Israel, saying, my Sabbaths you are to guard by all means. Is that a serious command from a father? If you tell your child, do not go by that stove, it's hot. And you slap that hand. Don't touch the stove, it's hot. There's a reason. You're going to get burned. He says, by all means. He said, my Sabbath you are to guard by all means. You think he's serious when he says that? For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations to know that I am Yehovah, am setting you apart. And you shall guard the Sabbath, for it is set apart to you. Everyone who profanes it shall certainly be put to death. For anyone who does not work on it, that being shall be cut off from among his people. He was serious when he said that. And as the last one, it is truly here at the Sukkoth stop, or Sukkot in a sense, where we learn to rest in him and allow his word to give us his peace and strength. And so we begin our proper sojourning by calling upon His name and receiving the sign of our worship by keeping His Sabbaths. And this is the one we're all trying to work on, and we're supposed to be loving it. If we're not loving it, we're probably not practicing or doing something enough, because it's supposed to bring peace and shalom. I can't wait to get there every week. I'm thinking about it the day after. I can't wait to get to there, but then we got so much to still learn before we get there again. So this is a pretty big Torah portion. Now we're going to be going to Friday into the next one. We're going to be going into Devarim. Devarim, I think it's a word, right? Word? Devarim. I've been digging around, looking a little bit further ahead there, and I'm just been seeing how that other ministry we talked about, they got it all in the books of the Torah. Bamidbar and Devarim. And it follows suit rather than going through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It follows suit in those. It's pretty interesting. All right, well, everybody still on the same page, I hope.